Okay, we're in our third and final shiur on Parshat Matot. And so far, we've linked together the first part of the Parsha, which dealt with Nedarim, to the final part of the Parsha, which dealt with the request of Reuven and Gad to inherit the Eiver HaYarden. Yes. The question is, how does this link into the middle section of the Parsha? Right, how does it connect to this whole topic of Milchemet Midian, the war with Midian, and the division of the spoils of war? To address this, we're actually going to go back into the Reuven and God story and bring out further complexities in the Reuven and God story that's going to hopefully put this whole discussion in a whole new light. This is what's going to bring everything together. But we're going to go back to the Reuven and God story in order to do it. When taking a look at the story of Reuven and God, so we talked about last time one of the areas of complexity of the intent in Reuven and God. What was the area of intent that we talked about last time? Like 5 minutes ago, we just these two were back to back. Five. What did we talk about? Was the complexity there? Right. Meaning, do they want to build a dirah for Hashem or not? That was what the struggle was, and when they fight with Moshe, Rabbeinu, Moshe, are you trying to really pull them away from building a dirah Hashem in Israel or not? And at the end of the day, it seems like they respectfully make their request to Moshe, successfully defend themselves against the accusations of Moshe that they're trying to break away from Klal Yisrael, accept a neder that puts them at the forefront of battle to conquer Eretz Yisrael, see the neder through, and as we saw even in Sefer Yehoshua, and then even once again defend their intentions to Klal Yisrael on their way back home at the end of Sefer Yehoshua. And all of this paints a fairly positive picture of B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven, and connects them with all of the positive aspects of Neder that we've been discussing up until now, like maintaining the Shalom Bayis of Klal Yisrael, and working to build the Dirah LaHashem, both inside and of Eretz Yisrael and on the Eiver HaYarden. So it seems clear that their intentions with regards to remaining a part of Klal Yisrael and towards Eretz Yisrael were all in the right place. That seems to be what we should walk away with. Everybody fought them, but they proved themselves. They showed that their intent was pure. They want to build a Dirah LaHashem. They want to maintain Shalom Bayis. They want to build up Eretz Yisrael. But if all of this is true, then there's a fundamental question to ask about B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven. If you want to maintain Shalom Bayis in Klal Yisrael, and go into Eretz Yisrael, and build up Eretz Yisrael, and build a Beit HaMikdash, if you want to do all these things, what should you do? Go in, right? We validated their desire to stay outside, that it wasn't with negative intent, but why are they staying outside at all? Why not go into Eretz Yisrael? That question we never answered. That question we never addressed. There's another layer of what's happening in this story. Many of the Mefarshim and Chazal pick up on it. We're going to read quite a few. A lot of the Sukkim and the Midrashei Chazal that I'm quoting, I actually saw on a Sefer that's not by Rav Moshe Shapira, but it's by one of his Talmidim, but that he wrote independently, called Mima'amakim. And I found that it was a very... he quoted a lot of really good sources, and I struggled with the way that he pieced them together, so I broke them apart and built them together myself. So this is my own understanding of these incredible sources, which I wouldn't have had access to in the same way without Mima'amakim. It is relatively well known, though, that there was something else at play with Reuven and Gad. What reason would they have had to stay on the Eiver HaYarden?
Isn't it that they had a lot of sheep, and they wanted a grazing
land? Yeah. You know how I know that Sima's right? It's the first pasuk, yeah. It's the first pasuk of the paragraph. So open up your Chumashim. Perek Lamed Bet Pasuk Aleph. It's not even hidden away. It's the opening pasuk of this paragraph. Perek Lamed Bet Pasuk Aleph. Umikne Rav. That's the first two words. They didn't tell you who it is yet. Just know we're talking about lots and lots of flock. Umikne Rav Hayali Bnei Reuven Bnei Gad Atzum Meod. Bnei Reuven and Bnei Gad had a tremendous amount of flock. Atzum Meod. It was tremendous. The Pesukim here are very intentionally emphasizing for us that they genuinely had a lot of flock. They had an intense amount of livestock. And not only that, but they saw something incredible that the pasuk is emphasizing as well. Vayiru et eretz Yazir ve et eretz Gilad v'ine hamakom makom mikne. And they put two and two together.
we have a lot of flock. We just want a lot of grazing land. I see opportunity.
Now, saying I see opportunity is already weighing it against Reuven and Gad. And that's not necessarily how Chazal and the Mefarshim view it. The Sefer Mimachim himself emphasizes what we've been talking about in Sefer Midbar, which is earlier what we brought up last year, is that it even emphasizes the word makom. And Mimachim says that they were on a tremendously lofty level. They understood that part of who they were as Reuven and Gad, that if they have Mikne Rav, Atzum Me'od, then by definition, the makom that is shayach to them, the makom that is relevant to them, is going to be makom mikneh. And suddenly there's this makom mikneh, like, this is why we're here. This is for us. They felt that it was intended for them. Mimachim further emphasizes this by pointing out that after the war with Midian, Moshe is given no indication whatsoever of what to do with the conquered land. They go, they win it, they take it over. Then Reuven and God say, hey, we know what to do with this land. This land should go to us. It's part of who we are. He even goes so far, he goes a little farther afield than we're going to go. Malcolm even describes, if you take a look in the piece that he has there, he even describes how the actual identities of God and Reuven are inherently connected to physical possessions in a good way, and how it was truly proper for them to inherit this land. So the impetus was what to do with their mikneh, what to do with their material possessions. But nothing negative so far. In fact, Chazal seemed to indicate that this was the reason why they even went to war with Midian in the first place. I apologize if you don't have these Midrashim in your sheet. I'm going to try to add them before I put it up online to the source sheet. But the Medrash Rabbah says as follows. Ma HaKadosh Baruch Hu Oseh Notel Nechasim Mizeh Venotein Lezeh. He goes and takes physical possessions from one and gives it to another. Shne'emar, Ki Elokim Shofet Zeh Yashpil Vezeh Yarim. God is the judge and he raises one up and puts one down. A few lines later, it links it back in. Teidalacha says the Midrash. Kishabikesh sheyashru b'nei Reuvenu b'nei God. When b'nei Reuvenu b'nei God asked to become wealthy because they knew that that was part of who they were meant to be. He pilat ha-midyanim lifnei Yisrael. He threw the Midyanim in front of Klal Yisrael. Kidei sheyashiru b'nei God b'nei Reuven. Meaning the whole purpose of the war with Midian was to give this land to them. That's how Chazal understand the narrative of the story. The war with Midian, one of the underlying reasons for the war with Midian was to give this land to them. Makativ Lamala, what did it say earlier? Vayeshuv b'nei Yisrael et neshem Midian ve'tzapam v'chulei. That they go and they conquered all of this land and all of these people. V'achar kach amar. And afterwards it says, u'mikne rav. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu lowered down the Midianim and rose up Klal Yisrael. Based on this Midrash, again, the goal of the war was for them to get this land, that it was certainly a good thing that they got this land. It was what was intended for them. Furthermore, when Moshe Rabbeinu gives the brachot to the Shvatim in Vizot HaBracha, the bracha to God, one of the aspects of the bracha to God, it's in Devarim Perek Lamegimel Pasuk Chaf, Ulegad Amar, Baruch Marchiv God, blessed is he who expands God. And the Or HaChaim says, Perush, he explains the pshat of the pasuk. Hirchiv Hashem lo b'nechasim rabim, that the bracha that Moshe is giving to God is that God blessed him by giving him a tremendous amount of monetary wealth. Dichtiv, as it says, u'mikne rav haya l'bnei God. Quoting our pasuk from our parsha. This all emphasizes that material wealth seems to be intended for b'nei God and b'nei Reuven. It would then seem like they made the right decision to request to inherit the Eivah HaYarden as a makom that matched this part of their identity and this part of who they were. However, there are other sources, other psukim, other midrashei chazal, that seem to say the exact opposite. One instance where this problematic relationship, not a positive relationship, but a problematic relationship between B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven and their material wealth surfaces is in the Psukim in their discussion with Moshe Rabbeinu. when presenting the fact that they're willing to inherit, willing to go and inherit Eretz Yisrael for their brothers if they get to keep the Eivah HaYarden, they refer to it as such. If you take a look in your Chumashim, Perek Lamed Bet Pasuk Tet Zayin, back to the B'nai Gad, B'nai Reuven discussion. Say B'nai Gad, B'nai Reuven, after Moshe Rabbeinu blasts them for being like the Meraglim, like, no, totally different conversation here. Vayikshu'elav, they go and they approach him to reframe the conversation. Vayomru, and they say, Gidrot Tzon Nivneh L'miknenu Po V'arim L'tapenu, we'll build pens for our flock here, and cities for our children. And then we're going to go out and we'll fight for you and we'll wait till you inherit the land and then we'll come back. When Moshe agrees, he says in Pasuk Chavdalid, the nuance in the Pasuk here, Rashi notes this from a Midrash. Moshe responds, fine, b'nu lachem arim letapchem v'gidrot litzonchem. Go and build cities for your children and pens for your flock. What does Moshe do?
He switches
the order. What's the order of B'nai Gad and Reuven?
The pens.
Go take care of not just the pens. Go take care of the flock, and then
the children,
and then your families. I can imagine a lot of husbands came back to very angry wives that night, right? Moshe puts them in their place. What do you do first?
Take
care of your children and build cities for your children, and then go build pens for your flock. Priorities. Mm-hmm. Priorities. Rashi in Pasuk Tet Zayin says. Chasim hayu al mamonam, on this meaning relating to this, these two psukim. Chasim hayu al mamonam yotir min bneihem uvenotehem. They were worried more about their material wealth than their own children, than their own daughters and sons. Shehikdimu miknehem litapam, that they put their flock before their children. Therefore, Amar lahem Moshe lo kenasu. Don't do it like that. Ha'ikar, ikar, va'tafel, tafel. Know what's primary and what's secondary. What's truly important and what's less important. You've mixed up your priorities. V'nu lachem tchila arim letapchem. Go first build cities for your children. V'achar kach gidrot litzonchem. Rashi is quoting a Midrash. The Midrash says it much more sharply, much more strongly. Also in the Medrash Rabbah, they're basically the ones that we're quoting all right next to each other in the Medrash Rabbah, which is why it seems so confusing. I took apart all of these sources and had to build something that made more sense because they were contradictory. Davar Acher, Leiv Chacham Lemino, Ze Moshe. He's quoting a pasuk, two halves of a pasuk. One says, Leiv Chacham Lemino, that the heart of the intelligent one goes to the right. Says the Midrash, that's referring to Moshe. V'leiv k'sil li smolo, and the heart of the fool goes to the left. Who's the fool? Eila b'nei Reuvenu b'nei Gad. Moshe is the chacham, and b'nei Gad and Reuven are the fools. Shasu et ha'ikar tafel v'ata tafel ikar.
How's that contradicting?
Is it that they're really great that HaKadosh Baruch Hu organized the whole war with Midian to give them material wealth like they were supposed to have, and the bracha that Moshe gives them is a bracha? Or on the other hand, are they totally incorrectly prioritizing everything in their lives by recognizing their material wealth? Which one is it? And as I read this piece in the Mimagam, I was like struggling. Like he kept on quoting, going back and forth between the two. And he didn't, in my understanding of the piece, it could be that he did, didn't really unite those two sides together. He brought out the inconsistency, but how do you deal with that? And how does that fit into the rest of the Parsha? And that's not even the worst of it. This last chazal that we're going to quote is very much the final nail in the coffin, so to speak. Says the Midrash, also in, I think in the same area in Bereishit Rabba. Yes. Similar. It's also in Bereishit Rabba in Bamidbar Rabba on Parshat Matot. Chazal say the following. Hear this. This is how deeply the issue went. And to me, what is the final say in terms of whether or not their intent was pure or impure here. V'chein ata motzei b'v'nei Gad u'v'nei Reuven shayu ashirim. So did we find by b'nei Gad u'v'nei Reuven who were rich. V'aya lehem mikneh gadol. And they had a tremendous amount of mikneh. V'chavivu et mamonam. And they loved their material wealth. V'yashvu lehem chutz me'eretz Yisrael. And because of this, they settled outside of Eretz Yisrael. Lefichach, says the Midrash. Hear the words. Lefichach galu tchila mikol hashvatim. And because of that, they were exiled before all of the rest of the shvatim. That to me seems to be the final say on whether or not they were in the right or the wrong.
So you're saying they chose their own exile more than...
Shene Emar, let's finish the Midrash. Shene Emar. Vayaglaim l'ruveni v'lagadi v'lachati shefet ha-menasheh, that they were the ones who were exiled first. Umiga ramlehem, what caused their exile, says the Midrash? Al shehifrishu atzmam minachehem, that they separated themselves from their brothers, bishvil kinyanam, because of their physical possessions, because of their physical property. Minayin, where do we know this? Imashakatuv batorah, everything is emanating from the same pasuk. Umiknerav haya libnei Reuven v'chule. Say Chazal, that the reason why they are exiled first is since they mixed up their priorities. And they prioritized their physical wealth over Eretz Yisrael. Since they didn't prioritize Eretz Yisrael, they were the ones who were exiled first. So, bringing this all together, there seem to be two separate issues regarding the intent of Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven in their request to inherit the Eiver HaYarden. On the one hand, there's a serious question about whether or not they're trying to break off from Klal Yisrael, to break that bayit of Klal Yisrael and destroy the Dira in Eretz Yisrael. Moshe challenges them on that point and says, you're doing this to break up Klal Yisrael. But Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven fight against that claim. They take a neder with the goal to prove that they don't have any negative intent on this. And it plays out in our parsha in Sefer Yehoshua that yes, on this point of intent, their intent was pure. They were looking to build a makom of kiddushah. They were looking to build with their brothers Eretz Yisrael. There never was an intent to break away from Klal Yisrael. There never was an intent to break away from a Dira LaHashem. There never was an intent to break up the shalom bayis of Klal Yisrael. However, there was never a discussion in the text and never a neder made relating to the possible broken intent when it came to the inappropriate focus on monetary wealth. That's never discussed in the Pesukim. That's never challenged by Moshe. That's never challenged by Bnei Yisrael. That they never take a neder on.
Can you repeat that?
On their relationship to their physical wealth. The whole discussion of intent in the Pesukim is only about Dira LaHashem. The discussion of intent in the Pesukim never touches upon, except hints to it, hints to in that little exchange of do you put the tzon first or the tapam first? That's it. There's almost like slight rebuke there with the understanding that the focus of what we're talking about here is, are you going to Eretz Yisrael or not? And the answer was yes, and they followed through. But about whether or not they prioritize their material wealth over Eretz Yisrael, it's hinted to in the text. But it's never an explicit conversation between Moshe, and there's never a neder taken on that part of their intent. There seems to have been severe negative intent underlying the neder itself when it came to placing monetary wealth over Eretz Yisrael and even their own families. That broken negative intent of prioritizing physical possessions over spirituality was embedded within the neder the entire time. That's what ultimately led to their downfall and their exile before the other 10 tribes during the Chorban HaBayit. Was the negative intent that was laced within their neder, not about Dira LaHashem, but about a negative relationship to their monetary possessions and a prioritization of their monetary possessions over Eretz Yisrael and even their own families. Good so far? It's sad and depressing, but good so far? Fundamental question. Even if this is true, how is this related to the whole discussion of neder? Our whole point in all of the shirim was to get everything under this banner of nedarim. I just claim that they had negative intent in the context of their neder about monetary possessions. However, what did we say that the essence of a neder was? Intent about Dira LaHashem. That's what we talked about in the first shir. In the second shir, that's awesome that there clearly was a problem here with their monetary wealth, but what does that do with a neder? Where do the issues of negative intent regarding monetary possessions fit into this discussion?
Maybe it's their personal homes.
You don't have to look so far. It's in the psukim. It's always in the psukim. The Oregon Eliyahu had a very, very, very short piece. And he wanted to make a point about Neder. And so when he talked about Neder, he talked about Didrei Lashem. But then he was busy going off and talking about the 3 weeks. I don't know if he would agree with me or disagree with me, and it might be that I'm totally wrong, and therefore he would disagree with me, because he's going to be right. But he doesn't discuss this at all. He builds this whole piece about Neder as being explicitly and singularly linked to Didrei Lashem. That's not what the Medrash says. And that's not what the Pasuk says. Go back to the first source on the sheet. Go back to Yaakov's Neder. Bereshit, Perek Chavchet, Pasuk Chavbet, says in the original Neder that we quoted in the beginning of the first shir, this stone that I place under my head, I will make into a Beit Elokim. And we stop there. Mid Pasuk. What's the second half of the Pasuk? V'chol asher titen li, aser asrenu lach. And everything that you give to me, I will give meiser from this to you. What's the content of the second half of the original Neder? It's all about monetary wealth. That suddenly makes this parsha put us in a very different light. And while Rav Gedaliah Ushur was focusing on the first half, which is totally legitimate, we spent a whole shiur talking about one half of it also. If you take a look at the midrash that he quotes in source number 2, all it says is Yaakov patach beneder tchila leficha kol mishu noder lo yet toleh haneder elabo. Anything there about dira? Anything? It just says all nedarim follow Yaakov's first neder, and there was more to his first neder. There's an entire second piece to what nedarim are all about. Nedarim are also about one's relationship to their monetary possessions. As we discussed before, the premise of a neder is the intent behind the neder. The other half of what nedarim themselves are about are the intent that one has with regards to his or her monetary possessions. Whether one intends to acquire them purely for selfish purposes, or whether one intends to acquire them for the purpose of dedicating them to Hashem. Question: how does one prove that the true intent that they have in acquiring monetary possessions is still focused on the spiritual, still focused on HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Yes, says Eliza, because I read the pasuk, by giving Meiser. That's what's being brought out in Yaakov's original Neder. That the way I show that my relationship to my monetary possessions has pure intent behind it, within it, underlying it, is through the act of Meiser itself. That's how one's true intention comes out. That's what Yaakov is teaching us. If you can, bear with me on this. If you don't, it's okay. And then re-listen to it and then take it in, and I'll show you the Maharal inside. It's an incredible Maharal. I had to sit with it for a while. The Maharal discusses how this is inherent in the word Maaser itself. He points out that the word, what? Give me a word that's for wealth that sounds like Maaser. You're supposed to give what? Maaser. That Osher, wealth, and Maaser share the same root. They're built on the same fundamental building blocks. Why is that? Says the Maharal. What is Eser itself? Maharal is always discussing numbers. He's always the individual to go to when you want to understand what a number is about. He says, what is Eser? What is 10 really about? He says that 10 Eser is the number that takes all previous numbers back to their root. How so? All numbers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. They're all individual and they're all unique. After 9, we get to 10, where all the previous 9 are then united together. What unites those 9 numbers together?
The 0.
The other one. The 1 that's placed before it. That's what unites everything that's behind it. If you place the 1 in front of it, that's what unites those other 9 together. It's indicative of the oneness that binds together those individual components. When a person gives maaser, says the Maharal, a person is taking that 10th portion and dedicating it to Hashem, showing that what unifies all of his or her osher together, all of his or her wealth together, is a dedication to spirituality and godliness. And that's why we give the 10th portion. It elevates the previous 9 by binding them together under that oneness. That's what reveals the intent behind one's osher. Incredible Maharal. The connection between osher and eser and maaser. I would also claim, just to link it back to our issue of neder, I don't know if this is true. This is me taking it a little bit further afield. But I suspect I was playing with the word. Remember, I played with the word of neder and dira. I wonder, and it's just a wonder, if you reorganize the letters of the word neder, it just happens to be that you get another word, dinar, which is a word for currency. And I wonder if there isn't an underlying connectivity, even in the building blocks of the letter itself, between currency, why dinar as opposed to kesef or any other type of, I don't know, between dinar and neder, but b'derech ha'afshar, I wanted to put that out there. Before we take it back around, Aliza.
I don't know. I don't know how to articulate this, but just to like bring it also back to moving down Chatzi Shevet Menashe, if we're speaking about the word Eser, like without them, there's only the 10 Shvatim that you could divide the land up if they don't have the right intent.
Interesting. I wish there were only 9, but I guess it's 9.5, which is interesting.
But Menashe is not really one of the Shvatim.
Yeah.
So, minus Reuben and God, that would make it 10.
Food for thought. I like it. I would want to,
I don't like know.
I'd love to see how that would be developed. You can figure it, if you can link it, not figure it out, if you can link it into the issue of 10. No, that's great. What?
I can't figure that out. That's just.
We'll put it on definitely on the list of things to try to unpack in the context of this parsha, but for sure, it sounds like it links in. Okay. Yeah, and then we're going to pull everything together and totally break apart this entire story. Okay. I suspect that both of these aspects of what the essence of a neder are is what underlies the story of Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven. But only one of them is what gets addressed. As we talked about before, the dira part gets addressed, but the aspect of monetary wealth, that doesn't get addressed. And since it was never addressed, their negative, problematic, and selfish intent with regards to physical wealth and monetary possessions, that's what poisons the neder itself, and therefore eventually over time reveals itself to be poisoned later on in history with their downfall and their exile before the other Shvatim. Part of their intent was good. The part of the neder that's Yirat LaHashem, there it was pure, and therefore they do go back b'shalom at the end of Sefer Yehoshua. And they do live there and prosper there for a long time. But because laced within that neder was the negative intent on the other side of the neder, which is the part that relates to monetary wealth, since that part was poisoned, that reveals itself later in history, and they end up being exiled first because of their inappropriate relationship to monetary wealth. That, in my mind, explains the push and pull that we see in Chazal. How they view Bnei Reuven and Bnei Gad depends on which part of their intent they're examining. If they're speaking about Bnei Reuven and Bnei Gad, if they're talking about their dedication to Eretz Yisrael, then the Midrashim paint them in a positive light. If they're speaking about their broken prioritization of monetary wealth above their brothers, Eretz Yisrael, and even their own families, then they're painted in a very negative light. Good until now, because now we're going to explain how this whole parsha works. in my funny brain, which hopefully will make sense. Yes?
I was just going to connect it for the second part, how about the shalal and saying, how are you going to use the shalal? Like, are you going to use it in the right way or the wrong way?
Yes! Yes!
Jumping jacks.
We did. We broke down this parsha totally wrong.
Sorry.
I'm sorry. I'm like ridiculously over time. Here we go. I broke down this parsha totally wrong. It's not part one is the Dar, and part two is Milchemet Midyan and the Shalal, and part three is Reuven God and Chatzitz Zera Menashe. I think it's totally different. Part one is Nedarim. What is a Neder about? Part two is how that plays out in reality, in the context of... Of what? What happens next, literally, what happens next in the story? Milchemet Midyan. What Milchemet Midyan presents is the opportunity to explore both aspects of what a neder is. First through the shalal, monetary wealth, and then through makom and dira. That's how you break down this parsha. The Milchemet Midyan produces the ability to examine both sides of a neder. And you see that so beautifully reflected in the story of the Shalal, which gets its own story. That's why it's not just two or three psukim. It's a ton of psukim. It's dozens of psukim talking about the division of spoils. Why and how does it frame it? They came back. When they came back, Moshe Rabbeinu says, okay, here's what's going to happen. Hear the words. We're going to take all of the spoils and divide them in half. Half go to those who fought in battle, and half go to the rest of Klal Yisrael. I wish it were 1/10, and it's not, and I don't know why it's not, but 1/500th of what goes to the people who fought in the war goes to the Kohanim. And 1/50th of what goes to the rest of the nation goes to the Levim. What are we doing with the Shalal? It's not Meiser per se, it's not 1/10, but we're taking a portion out from each side and dedicating it to they who serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're giving it to the Kohanim and the Levim. We're showing that even though we conquered Midyan, we're elevating the monetary wealth by separating a portion out and giving it to those who serve in Beit Hashem. That's what we're literally doing. That's why there's this whole long discussion of the Shalal. So much so that we even see that when the story concludes, it concludes on a very funny note. After all of this happens and we split it in half and each part, the soldiers give their portion to the Kohanim, the nation gives their portion to the Levium, Take a look in your Chumashim, in Perek Lamed Aleph, Pasuk Mem Chet. After all is said and done, Vayikrevu el Moshe hapikudim asher le'alfei hatzava sarei alafim v'sarei ha'meot. The commanders of the thousands and the legions, the officers of the thousands and the officers of the hundreds, they all approach Moshe. The heads of the people who went out to war all approach Moshe. Pasuk Mem Tet. Vayamru el Moshe, avadecha nas'u et rosh anshei ha'milchama asher biyadinu v'lo nifkad mimenu ish. They said to Moshe, your servants took a census of the men of war under our command, and not a single person is missing. And because of that, we were deeply moved as we recognized that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took care of us. And therefore, v'nakrev et korban Hashem, ish asher matza klei zahav, et adav, et samid, tabat, agil v'chumaz, lechaper al nafshoteinu lifnei Hashem. So we've brought an offering to Hashem. What any person found of gold vessels, an anklet, a bracelet, a ring, an earring, a clasp, anything that we found of those types of things to atone for our souls before Hashem. What are they doing? Of their own free will, they're elevating their monetary possessions and giving it to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as a recognition that the only reason that they survived and exist, the only reason they have what they have, the reason that they're here is because of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Therefore, Vayikach Moshe Ve'Elazar HaKohen Et Zahav Me'itam Klo Klei Ma'aseh Vayihi Kol Zahav HaTshma Sherimu LaHashem V'chulein. It goes and counts all of the shalal they gave.
Beautiful story. Then there's a really awkward pasuk. It almost seems really mean. And out of context. It's only 5 words long. It was unnecessary. There's nothing unnecessary in Torah.
The next pasuk, pasuk nun gimel. Anshei ha-tzava bazazu ishlo. That's the conclusion. As for the men of the legion, the people who fought in the war, each man looted for himself. And you can hear the derogatory tone in the pasuk. But you're sitting there going, they fought the war. They won this stuff. And they even gave 1/50th of every, 1/500th of everything they had to the Kohanim. What more do you want from them? Why are you criticizing them for taking what they're own, what they deserve?
Why does it seem like I suspect, why I hear it underneath the psukim? Why are they being criticized? Because it's showing that beneath the surface they don't recognize that they need to bring everything back up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They need to raise up their monetary wealth to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's why it ends on that note.
The Anshei Tzava who took for themselves versus last pasuk in the paragraph, Vayikach Moshe Ve'Elazar HaKohen Et HaZahav Me'et Tzarei Alafim Va'Me'ot Vayaviu Oto Al Ol Mo'ed Zikaron Libnei Yisrael Lifnei Hashem.
That's the end of this paragraph. It's two different ways of relating to monetary wealth. Just giving what you're supposed to give and taking the rest for yourself because the focus is on selfishly taking from me, or do I raise it up and bring it to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And that's the whole story of the Shalal, is the aspect of neder that relates to monetary wealth. Whereas on the flip side, that next story, which is the other half of the issue of neder, is totally dealing with the issue of dira, and that's the issue of B'nai Gad and Reuven. And because that story is meant to bring out the other side of what a neder is, about building dira l'Hashem, that's the focus of the story. But because a neder has two parts to it, underneath the surface here, the other half of a neder is missing, and that's what leads to their ultimate downfall generations later. That's Parshat Matot.
Questions, thoughts, comments before we wrap up? Yeah?
Wait, I don't understand what you were saying about those Anshei, the ones that were doing the opposite of what they were supposed to do with their monetary wealth.
Meaning the people who ran the army took certain aspects of what they had gotten from their... from the war, from the spoils of war, and they gave even extra. They raised up of their own initiative to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they gave it over to the Beit HaMikdash, to the Mishkan rather. Mm-hmm. But then the Pesukim emphasized, but everybody else didn't do that. Mm-hmm. But they didn't have to, so why even point that out? That's, I think, pointing out that contrast of what really the goal is to want to go further and further and dedicate one's monetary wealth to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, recognizing that that's the source that it comes from, and recognizing that intrinsic aspect of what a neder is really about.
Yeah, but you said something about looting or something, that they were doing bad.
No, it's not bad. That was the way that that this particular chumash in the English side phrased it as looting, but it means taking of the spoils of war.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So what to walk out with this is, just how complex Nedarim are. First of all, even also on the bigger picture, that when you read a Parsha, just look at how beautifully structured these Parshiot are. We started off with the whole question of, look at how obvious the rest of the Parsha is, but Nedarim don't make any sense. And then when we critically analyzed Nedarim here and the source Neder in Parshat Vayetze, that it reframed the whole Parsha for us. And went from a Parsha that was about, how do you go into Eretz Yisrael? We don't know what Nedarim has to do with it, but fighting Midian, getting the other side of the Yarden, and Reuven getting that land, that all is pshat. But that underneath the surface is this whole examination of what a Neder is, an examination of, for these people who were Dor Ba'ei Ha'aretz, and for us as well, how do we relate to monetary wealth? Especially as we're going to go into a land which has tremendous physical bounty, but also at times can restrain itself, and there are times of drought and times where there isn't monetary wealth available. How do we relate to monetary wealth? Can we recognize that everything in the physical world has to be linked back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And that every time we go forward, we're meant to build a makom that's dira l'Hashem, that anytime we build, we're meant to be building a makom l'shchinah, a makom l'kedushah, we're supposed to be building a makom l'Hashem, a dira l'Hashem. Whether it's physically building an actual house in this world, settling Eretz Yisrael and building a home in Eretz Yisrael, or even on the deeper level like we talked about, linking it right back to Nedarim. and looking at the words that we use, words like HaKadosh Baruch Hu used to create the heavens and the earth, words that were used, the letters that Bezalel used to build the Mishkan, are we using our words to build a Dira LaHashem, or are we using our words to build the Alinu Abama? How are we using our words? What are we dedicating? What are we dedicated to? How are we being focused on HaKadosh Baruch Hu in everything that we have? Our houses and the stuff inside of it. The home and the shalal. Our monetary possessions and where we live. Are we using that through our actions and through our speech and raising it up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is what we have to do in the context of Eretz Yisrael? To build our home as a makom shechina, as a dira l'Hashem? Or lo alinu, the opposite? B'ezras Hashem, we should be able to have clarity about where we live, where we're supposed to live, which is Eretz Yisrael. To be able to build that home here, or eventually B'ezras Hashem and Eretz Yisrael as a dira l'Hashem, with shalom bayit, with positive speech, with connectivity between each member of the household, and therefore making it a place that the Shekhinah can rest, and making sure that we reflect upon and understand that everything that exists inside of that home, everything that I own, really comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And to, like the Maharal said, take all of my osher and give ma'aser, not just to give ma'aser, but as the heads of the army taught us in this story, go even beyond that. And make sure to recognize that that one that we place before the one and the zero of the ten is that oneness that unifies everything that we have, and that it's all unified in being for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. These are deep levels of avoda that are being brought out here at the end of Sefer Midbar, and Bezrat Hashem, by all of us, should be able to succeed both in the realms of our monetary possessions and the realm of makom. Bezrat Hashem will, whenever next time is, within the next week, we'll have shir on Parshat Mas'e. It'll be our concluding shir for the semester in the Midrashah and on Sefer Midbar. Please read through. It's a complicated parsha with a lot of different moving parts. Please read through Parshat Mas'e before we come to next time in Midrashah, and we're going to unify that whole parsha together, Bezrat Hashem, together.